All of our readings this morning have a knack for turning our expectations upside down. Just when we think we have things figured out, just when we think we know what God is up to, how we're supposed to respond, and what the general order of our world is going to be, bam. Micah, Paul, and Jesus all seem to have these magic remote controls and are ready to push a button to confound our expectations at just the right moment. We're right on the heels of Christmas, with recent memories of tinsel and presents and cookies and credit card bills. The wise men are still lingering, not quite gone from the scene, focusing our attention not just on the new babe, but also on their delightful and rather impressive gifts, honoring God incarnate with gold and frankincense and myrrh. And to top it off, the jubilant budget reports of our annual meeting last week still hang in the air. A surplus in the midst of this recession? Unheard of. Hallelujah. And yet, our lessons this morning seem to be hitting another note, turning our attention in a different direction. Yes, of course, it's good to give of your material riches. Let me be clear, Phil. I'm not telling anyone to rescind their pledges in favor of the kindness that money just can't buy. But what Micah is telling us is that there's more to the picture. Pledging is, of course, crucial to our common life together and to living out our mission in the world. But that right there is the hang-up. We still have to go out through these doors and live out our mission in the world. Do justice. Love kindness. Walk humbly with our God. Part of what Micah was reacting against was the observation that so many people around him expected that they could get off the hook with God, so to speak, by making some nice sacrifices. You know, a little burnt calf here, some rams, 1,000 barrels of oil, maybe even your firstborn if you're feeling extra generous or guilty. But what we're hearing this morning is that this is not how it's going to work. These material exchanges are not what God is requiring of us. This is not about bartering with God, but about reorienting our expectations and living into God, not scamming God, but following God, walking humbly with God. Of course, we all have our expectations, and often they are quite helpful. It would be rather impractical, of course, to approach each new day, each interaction, each new project at work with no expectations whatsoever. It would be exhausting, not to mention ridiculous, to engage each new situation while trying to ignore all of our prior experience. The problem our readings are addressing today is when we become bound by our expectations and are unable to see beyond them. They can get in the way of doing justice, of loving kindness, of walking humbly with our God. I, for one, have certainly had my fair share of being blinded by my expectations. I don't know about you. But one story sticks out in my mind. Before coming to Berkeley for seminary, I worked as a campus minister at my alma mater in New Hampshire. I had been very active at the Episcopal Student Center, fondly called The Edge, and was excited to take the helm there after graduating. To my surprise, and to the surprise of many students there, our rector had some additional plans. He announced his intention to hire a curate, a new priest in training for the parish, and to house this person at The Edge. Responses from the students and myself ranged from skepticism to stubborn rage. How could he do this to us? Didn't he know he was ruining our beloved community? That was our space. But despite our best efforts at changing his mind, the plan progressed. One particularly embarrassing element of the whole fiasco was how ageist we young folks were. I remember one student boldly proclaiming that if we absolutely had to have a curate living at the edge, the person couldn't possibly be over 30, or the whole campus ministry would go to hell in a handbasket very quickly. We were totally bound by some awfully foolish expectations. Well, fast forward a few months, and it was time to interview the two final candidates for the position. Because I was going to be working so closely with this person, I was invited to be a part of the interview process. I met with the first candidate, who conveniently was precisely 30 years old, and on paper, she looked like she would be our best bet. But over the course of the conversation, it became clear that she wasn't a good fit at all. I was stunned, disappointed, and scared. My expectations were being shaken up. A few days later, I met with the second candidate, and my expectations promptly completed the 180 and were dropped smack on their head. Madeline was delightful. I breathed a giant sigh of relief. She was eager and pleasant and sharp and brought with her all the gifts we were hoping for. And I scratched my head. She was almost a decade older than my parents. How could this be? Really? Despite our initial judgment, the path forward was clear. The real punchline came when a student and I went to meet with the executive committee and share our feedback from the interviews. We knew that this committee had some pretty strong expectations for us, given our rather pointed words earlier in the process, and they too were floored and elated by our endorsement of Madeline. Now, several years later, I laugh about this with my former colleagues, thankful that our initial plans were overridden and that I gained such a dear friend in Madeline. What strikes me most, though, as I recall that humorous meeting, is the humility that God foisted on us as we were forced to shed some of our rigid expectations. We had been so sure that we knew exactly what was needed, that we were blinded to how God was working around us. Paul definitely knew what he was talking about when he reminded the Corinthians that God will destroy the wisdom of the wise and thwart the discernment of the discerning. Sometimes we just can't see the whole picture, and God knocks us on the head with some much-needed humility. We have to open ourselves to that humility, take it on, wrestle with it. Humanity certainly has a lot of great things figured out, but God still has some major tricks up her sleeve. These surprises, these twists on our expectations and blessed opportunities for newfound humility are at the core of what Jesus is talking about today. These simple lessons he gives from the side of the mountain are his way of turning our idea of how the world works upside down. This is no longer our world, but his. No longer the world we have constructed, but the one that he is leading us into. Jesus is calling us to join him in a radical kingdom, one for which Micah gives us a simple but daunting roadmap. This is not just a vision of an incredible kingdom yet to come, but the proclamation of a kingdom that is already infiltrating our lives. Blessed are the meek, blessed are those who mourn, Jesus tells us. It's not that they'll be blessed as compensation for their pain sometime down the road, but they are blessed today. He blesses them, and he blesses us now, today, as much as that may sometimes clash with our expectations. Blessed are the poor in spirit, he says. Even at our very worst, in our darkest hours of doubt and despair, even when we least expect it, then too are we blessed. God is with us beyond our wildest imaginings, and expectations. God sees the challenges we face and is turning the pain of the world upside down. He is transforming it. We may suffer for walking this path with Jesus. We may be persecuted for righteousness' sake, but God will have the last word. So reconsider the expectations that may be holding you back. See if maybe you can loosen up your grip on them. You just may be surprised by how you're newly able to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with our God.